Now, there's an amazing Australian who's in Australia. He doesn't normally call Australia home, well, not for now anyway. He lives in Jerusalem. He's an author. His name's Anthony Lowenstein. And I'm delighted to say he's on the line to talk to me about his book, a new book, which has been out a couple of weeks, and maybe how we might or might not go best about dealing with the war on drugs, if there is or should be a war on drugs. He's on the line. Nice to talk. Hope you're well.
Thanks for having me. I'm good.
So, not normally home here in Australia, normally Jerusalem. Can I ask you what that's like briefly?
Sure. It is a beautiful, crazy, interesting part of the world. I'm obviously Australian, but living there for a couple of years, partly for work. I'm a journalist and have a young family there. But it is, politically, it's not really my worldview. It's a very pretty conservative place. There's a very ugly occupation of Palestinian territory, which I oppose, but it's a, having said all that, it's also a fascinating, interesting place where a lot of people converge. History is very much alive. The old city, you sort of walk through, you know, where, and I'm an atheist Jew, but where Jesus walked. So all that is a pretty intoxicating mix, I have to say.
Yeah, intriguing. And of course, we've seen you write in the New York Times, The Guardian, you've written for the BBC, The Washington Post, author of Disaster Capitalism, Making a Killing Out of Catastrophe. You've produced documentaries. So you've been there and done it quite a bit, even though you sound like a young gentleman, Anthony, if I can say that.
Well, that's nice. You can.
Very
I'm
well.
40s, but it's very nice that you say that.
Okay. tell me about this book first off. The War on Drugs. Let's set it up with this question. You can arrest your way out of the drug problem. True or false?
Well, false. It's false because we've seen in countless countries, Australia, US, UK, many Western countries, I'd say many countries around the world, that for at least four decades, and obviously things have been different in every country, there's been a concerted effort by law enforcement, many politicians, and this is often bipartisan. It doesn't particularly matter if there's a, for example, Labor or Liberal Prime Minister here or Republican or Democrat in the US. There's been a belief and an ideology, I'd say, that says that you can arrest people who deal drugs, take drugs, sell drugs. But the truth is that those sort of policies, in fact, have failed mainly because drug use has never been higher. Australia has one of the highest uses of illegal drugs in the Western world in terms of per capita. We're talking about everything from cannabis to cocaine. And the rates of drug abuse is also incredibly high. And Australia, although it's not like the US, which, as listeners may be aware, incarcerates huge numbers of people, there's about 2.3 million Americans in jail every night. Now, they're not all there for drug offences, but a sizable proportion are. And those policies, those persecutions, I would say, have not contributed to a lessening in drug use or abuse. And in fact, I argue in the book that the drug war has never been about ending drug use or abuse or drug trafficking. In fact, it's often been a war on the poor and a war on minorities. And you see that in a lot of countries, including here in Australia. Yes, you sometimes see rich cocaine dealers being arrested. It happens, for sure. But in general, the people who are most affected, the ones who are mostly in jail, or, for example, as our federal government wants to drug test welfare recipients, we're talking about people who are the most marginalized. And it has no impact on people using drugs. So the question is, why are so many people using drugs? And the drug war ain't stopping those people getting it or using it.
Right. Do we just accept then in modern society that this is just going to be one of those issues that we'll never in fact get on top of, and we should deal with it more rather than crime as a health issue?
Well, that's very much what I say. And just to be clear, although I argue for the legalization and regulation of all drugs, and we can discuss that if you'd like, but that doesn't mean that in that kind of system, you know, we're encouraging people to take drugs, or we're saying, oh, there's no risk in drugs. Drug taking for sure can be risky. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not someone who says everyone should be taking drugs, far from it. But the truth is that the reason why a lot of people are dying of drugs, and just in New South Wales, as listeners will be well aware, those six or seven young people who died from taking bad ecstasy pills in the last 6 months or so, they weren't dying because of the ecstasy per se. They were dying because what was in those pills were toxic chemicals. They didn't know what was in the drug. And to me, it's not about saying everyone should be taking drugs. It's about accepting the fact that drugs can be and have been, for as long as humans have been on this planet, a normal part of life. And the fact is that 90% at least of people who take drugs, including in Australia, have no problem doing so. It's a normal part of their life. I'm not saying therefore I endorse it or otherwise. I'm saying they might use cannabis or ecstasy or cocaine, whatever it may be. It's only a tiny percentage of the population who have troubles with it for a range of reasons, whether it's depression, mental health problems, family issues, whatever it may be. And what I'm arguing for, and you know, I have to say it's not just me. I mean, Mick Palmer, who's the former head of the AFP, hardly a radical leftist, who is saying he was head of the AFP during the Howard years. And he was pursuing, I guess, a drug war of sorts when he was head of the AFP. But these days, he calls A, for legalization of cannabis, which I think is inevitable here in the coming 5 or 10 years. Probably hard to imagine happening maybe with Scott Morrison as Prime Minister, but I do think it's because he's against it. The listeners, I'm sure, will not be, you know, will be knowing that. But the idea that his ideal situation would be to legalize and regulate all drugs, because he said to me for my book that a lot of police, including him, realized that what they were doing by arresting people, charging people, was achieving nothing. Nothing. It wasn't stopping drug supply, wasn't stopping drug use. So if you ask, you know, is it about accepting the fact that people will do illegal drugs? Well, yes, to some extent, I do think that that's a normal part of life, not because I encourage it, but I think if in a legalized, regulated system, drugs would not simply be, you know, you don't go into a supermarket and buy heroin after your vegetables. Of course not. I mean, there are certain levels of drugs that would not be widely available at all, of which heroin is one of them. You would have heroin would only be available, for example, on prescription, which happens, I might add, already in many European countries. And drug use in those places on heroin has gone down. Although I'm calling for legalization of all drugs, in Portugal in 2001, they decriminalized all drugs, cannabis, heroin, everything, because they were facing this major HIV crisis where people were dying. It was the worst, highest rate in Europe. And roughly 20 years on, drug use of all drugs has gone down and across all ages. Now, it doesn't mean that people aren't still abusing drugs. They are, of course they are. But in general, the money that was going to be spent, huge amounts of money on law enforcement, is now being spent on education and health support for people who need it. And I'm not, you know, although I'm calling for legalization, I know it's not going to happen in Australia next week. I'm well aware of that. But I do think that my book's been out for 2 weeks, pills, powder and smoke around the country. And not just the interest from people who you would expect, maybe more liberal, left types, but a lot of people, including on the rise, realize that the government is spending, again, federal and state, insane amounts of money to achieve what exactly?
Yeah.
To achieve what?
Yeah.
And it's time for a fresh approach. And I think more people are open to that than they were years ago.
I think the Portugal example is an excellent example of what can happen if you travel down that road, if you're prepared to. I've got some interest in that because, as you pointed out, we lost half a dozen young Australians at music festivals who were taking this, what was effectively poison. Well, yes. What's the way to deal with that then? We've got parents. I know parents of very clever, high IQ, above average performance teenagers who go on to be in their early 20s, and they look at them and say, you don't surely go to these music festivals and take something. And they reply, yeah, actually I do, and it's cheaper than the booze. And yep. and a range of other things. So if you were saying to Australian government now, how do you stop the deaths, although, you know, that's easier said than done, I imagine. What's the advice?
Well, the advice is something that the New South Wales government is refusing to do, which is insane because it's not just ignorant, but it's also, in my view, complicit in deaths. You introduce, in my view, it should be mandatory. There should be pill testing at all music festivals.
Has that worked anywhere, though?
It's worked everywhere. Everywhere it's been tried. In Canberra, in the last year, there's been 2 tests for 2 music festivals. A, nobody died. Very important point. So people can find this online very easily. They can Google it themselves. Secondly, a number of bad pills that had awful chemicals were removed. People didn't take them. Pill testing is not just, by the way, at most events, the idea of simply testing a pill. It's also education. And in every country, it has been tried. Parts of Europe, the US, which is, it's a normal part of events, festivals. People's lives are being saved. It's not simply me saying this, it's the evidence showing that. And why the New South Wales government is refusing to budge on this, I suspect it's partly a refusal to back down in the face of what they see as a war that's been going for so long. But I mean, as listeners will be aware, public opinion shifting, and Alan Jones, again, hardly a radical leftist, is calling in the last 6 months for decriminalising drugs. I mean, this is a shift that's going on because people are realising that the harm that has been caused by individuals who are taking drugs. So if you ask me, pill testing is a good start. It's an important start. It's not going to save everybody's lives. It's a very important, and it's a logical thing to do, and it's proven everywhere. I mean, one thing also I want to say that it's important, and I think at the moment, speaking to a lot of teachers who work in public or private or Catholic schools, drug education in Australia is kind of a bit of a joke, meaning that it's either just say no, the Nancy Reagan idea, which clearly is not working, or it's saying, well, you might go to a party and you might see someone taking a pill and you shouldn't take it or just be cautious. Well, that's not drug education. In my view, in a mature society to deal with drugs, you would have drug education starting unbelievably young, maybe not a kindergarten level, but very young. It explains what drugs are, how they can be abused, how they can help people. And one thing that I think is changing the conversation here in Australia, but also overseas, and some listeners will be aware of this, is the growing use by doctors and therapists of psychedelic drugs, talking ecstasy, LSD, magic mushrooms, to help people who are depressed. PTSD, people who have addictions to alcohol and cigarettes, people who are at the end stage of their life. So, for example, there's been amazing studies in the US of people who have cancer who are going to die. And the drugs, of course, don't stop them dying, but what it does is it assists them mentally in preparing for that inevitability. And that's happening already now. I mean, there are doctors in New South Wales, I know, therapists who are giving these out. Now, just to be clear, no one's suggesting that people take drugs and take them home. This is done in a controlled environment with a therapist at a doctor's surgery. And it's conceivable to me within 5 or 10 years, including in the US and in Australia, that instead of when you go to your doctor maybe saying you're depressed or you have issues with mental health, instead of handing out antidepressants, and listeners will be aware that Australia is addicted, there's no other word for it, to antidepressants, which often don't help people, sometimes they do, that you would be given a treatment of those other kind of psychedelic drugs. So that I think is what will slowly break down this idea that because the government for decades has said, these drugs are all illegal and bad, don't take them, as the New South Wales Premier keeps on saying. The fact is that people are living their lives and ignoring that advice, frankly, and either using drugs for medicinal purposes, including cannabis, or they're using drugs in their daily social life and having no impact of it. And it's only the small percentage of people who need the assistance who have problems with it. That's the point.
Now, the safe injecting room, I'm pretty sure I'm right, Anthony Ardine, saying you've spent some time researching and looking at how that operates. Is that a success?
Look, it is. I mean, when the Safe Injecting Centre opened roughly 20 years ago, a bit less than that, there was massive opposition. Listeners who are older will remember that, often from much of the media, a lot of politicians. But 20 years on, the impact, and also I have to say the one in Victoria, which opened in Melbourne last year, has shown, and again, the evidence speaks for itself, not one individual has ever died in any safe injecting centre in the world. Not one. Australia, Canada, elsewhere. Not one. So that's the first point. Secondly, I was the first journalist ever to get access to or to speak to a number of the, I guess they call them clients, people who use the safe injecting centre in Sydney. They're in the book, although I couldn't name them. I know them, but I couldn't name them in the book. And they tell various stories. They're various ages. They obviously use heroin, some more than others. And it's important that people realise that this facility is not just saving lives, but its aim is also to reduce people's use of heroin. It's not like the idea is that you encourage people to use heroin. For some people, it's what they want to use, and I think they have the right to do it if they want, but it's about protecting people's a personal choice, but also to save people's lives and many of the police in the area accept that and support that. That's very clear. To me, there should be every single state and small towns in Australia should have a legally mandated safety injecting centre. There should be an ICE consumption room in Sydney. I mean, that's being discussed. ICE can be, not for all, but for many, a terrible drug, and it does awful damage, not for all, but for many. And the argument that says, well, by having an ICE consumption room or a safety injecting centre, you're encouraging people to take drugs, it simply doesn't work that way. It's not like people suddenly are more interested in using ICE or heroin because they know they can go somewhere. The figures just don't bear that out. And in places in Europe particularly, where a similar ICE consumption room exists, use often has gone down. And as I said, in Portugal, drugs, in fact, use have gone down in the last 20 years. So the Safe Injecting Centre in Sydney is an undeniable success. It now has pretty much bipartisan support. There are definitely some more conservative politicians on the Liberal side and others who oppose it, but it generally has bipartisan support because it works. And in Victoria, again, after years of opposition, it was opened last year, and that was a Labor Premier, Daniel Andrews, who calls himself a big progressive, and he opposed it. And he also, I might add, opposes pill testing, which is, for me, ridiculous, but there you go. So, yes, the Safe Injecting Centre works, and it should be, in my view, copied in other places around the country.
I saw a report in Victoria that crime around that safe injecting room had increased. How do you combat that?
Well, I've seen reports about that too, but I'm obviously sure exactly where you saw that, but I've also seen reports a bit later on that challenged those figures. Look, I mean, to some extent what happened in Sydney is a model about this, that no one is saying, including me, that somehow having these facilities means that crime suddenly disappears. The problem still is that you essentially are still making the drug illegal. So, in other words, there's still a criminal element. There are still criminal networks that will want to sell these drugs to people who want to use them. I think there's also, it's important to note that, in my view, that the idea that someone who has or sells drugs for personal use, I don't think, and I know some police agree with this, but often their superiors really don't enforce that, should not be prosecuted or charged. The idea in many countries around the world, there is almost an unofficial decriminalisation. It happens in parts of Australia as well, especially if you're white. It's a bit different, sadly, if you're a person of colour. But in general, there is a sense that people who are found with small amounts of whatever drug, could be ICE, heroin, cannabis, whatever, should not be prosecuted. And in my view, and some people might not agree with this, people who are maybe selling the drug simply for personal use, I just don't see any practical purpose in criminalising that person. They might be doing it for a range of reasons. I don't know what those reasons are. But it's really taking away the criminal aspect to it, because in the book, I spent a lot of time going to places that are on the front line of this drug war, Honduras, West Africa, Philippines. And the effect of seeing that with my own eyes is that these are the people at the other end, at the lower end of the food chain, the supply chain, that actually are either producing some of these drugs or suffering the most from them, from the drug war that's being prosecuted, mostly from Washington, but obviously from other places as well. And it makes no sense, zero sense. I mean, that's why, and I'm sure some listeners will find this a rather strange idea, but it's why I am calling, I'm not the first one to do so, the idea of ethically sourced cocaine. That sounds like a weird idea. But the idea of saying to people, well, this is a drug that in itself is, I would argue, can be harmless. It can also cause harm. I'm not denying that for a second. But if these drugs are coming from places, and if we continue prosecuting a drug war, we are essentially allowing countless numbers of millions of people in impoverished countries around the world to suffer for our enjoyment. When I say our, I mean the Australian population. And that to me is both immoral and impractical, and it brings a lot of anger, rightly so. So I guess what I'm really calling for is a wholesale rethink of these kinds of policies. And although, as I said, it's pretty hard to imagine that happening with the current Prime Minister, but frankly also with any Labor leader. I mean, Labor's been incredibly lacking in courage on this issue as well. This is kind of a bipartisan gutlessness, in my view. And it needs to change. Like, it's not like Labor's the great here I hear.
No, I understand. Let me ask you this. If someone sells someone a drug for personal consumption and that person then goes for drive and kills someone, who's responsible there?
Look, it's a really good question. You mean, is there complicity basically with the dealer? That's what you're asking.
That's what I'm asking,
really?
Yeah.
Legally.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I suppose the way I'd answer that really is, I do address some of this stuff in the book, actually, that, A, that happens unbelievably rarely. So that's the first point. It's not like there are people who are routinely going out taking drug X and, you know, killing people through driving or any other way.
Although we did have one. It's pretty raw in the mind of Sydney siders. I've got to be careful here because it's a case pending. But we do hear of people that go out, and the test rate is remarkable. I think we've got alcohol consumption and drink driving down pretty low in terms of percentages.
Yeah.
But when you look at and they don't test Anthony a million people, but they might test 100 or 200 people for drugs, and you know, they can have 30%, 40% of the results come back positive.
No, and to be clear, someone who supports legalizing and regulating all drugs, there should absolutely be drug testing on the roads. I mean, as I said, someone like myself who argues for this does not for a second think that there should be this kind of free reign, everyone just does drugs and who cares. No, it's the opposite of that. Anyone who advocates this seriously says, and for example, an example of this would be in the US, where there are some US states, of course, listeners will know, that have legalized marijuana. In some states, it seems like, well, the testing for cannabis, often at roadside checks, are not particularly accurate. But putting that issue aside, there are some states where it seems like driving under the influence of cannabis has gone up. That is a problem.
Yeah.
Undeniably, that's a problem. And someone like me who advocates these kind of policies of legalization looks at some of the US states that have legalized cannabis, and I suspect it's almost inevitable that federally that will happen. Maybe not with Donald Trump as president, but a lot of the Democratic candidates running for president in 2020 advocate legalizing marijuana. They federally advocate reparations for communities that have suffered from the drug war and huge investments in those communities because they suffered because of the drug war. So if you ask me, how do you deal with someone who potentially sells, I don't know, drug X to someone and they go out and kill someone on the roads, there could be potential for complicity there legally. I think that's true, but I think in a environment where there is less criminalization of drug use and drug dealing in a legalized system.
Mm.
The theory behind it is, and it's never a perfect system, is that a black market should almost disappear, because people who want to access or need to access certain drugs, cannabis, whatever else will be, will know where to find it. And the drugs will be, and of course, as I said before, most of the drugs that are causing the problems in society, it's not, for example, those poor kids who died from ecstasy. It was what was in the drug. That's the issue.
Mm.
That's the issue. Or bad heroin, for example.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And those drugs, that the harder drugs, in a legalized system, would be very difficult to get. They're not sort of available to anyone who wants it. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And because at the moment, you allow in a illegal system, as we have at the moment, you allow criminal networks to dictate what's in the drugs and what's available. Because last year in Australia, according to reliable figures, Australians spent $10 billion on illicit substances. It's going up every year. That's a lot of money.
Mm.
It's a lot of money.
Mm.
And that's obviously mostly cannabis, also cocaine and other drugs. But that to me is it's sustainable, I guess, in a way. I mean, people want to spend that money. If they have the money, good luck to them. But it seems a pretty crazy system where we're allowing criminal networks and drug cartels, often who are incredibly brutal, to dictate what's available and how much it's sold. That to me is insane.
Mm. All right, Anthony, who's in Melbourne, I have to say, today for the Melbourne Writers Festival, but you should look for the book. It's thought-provoking, and it's not just this is a good idea. It's backed up with a significant amount of statistics and research from international jurisdictions. That gives it great credibility, as do the people who've surrounded Anthony and said, that's very good work. The book's called Pills, Powder and Smoke, It's published in Australia by Scribe. Atney, I've enjoyed talking to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Likewise, I appreciate it. Thank you.